This episode is brought to you by PearNote. Throughout this month, we discussed how awesome PearNote is for taking notes in meetings, lectures, conferences, and more. PearNote allows you to combine notes of audio, video, and even slide decks. Whatever you type is kept in sync with the timeline of your media, allowing you to come back to the app, select a word, and be taken straight to that point in the timeline, or watch it back and see the words you typed highlighted as you typed them in real time. PearNote Free for Mac, which has recently been upgraded to take advantage of Lion features like versions, autosave, and full screen, also has the ability to now record higher bitrate audio and 720p video. Additionally, if you own Ecamm's call recorder for Skype, PearNote integrates with this plugin, allowing you to take notes whilst you're on a call, which of course is being recorded straight into PearNote for your future reference. All of these notes sync over Dropbox to PearNote for the iPad, so you always have your notes with you no matter where you are. You can get PearNote from the Mac App Store, the iOS App Store, or directly from usefulfruit.com, which is where you can also go for more information. And by Squarespace, everything you need to create an amazing website. Squarespace have a fantastic new offer at the moment, where if you buy one of their annual plans, or biannual plans, you will receive a custom domain name absolutely free. Go to squarespace.com/70decibels to sign up for their 2-week free trial and use the offer code 70decibels5 at checkout to receive 10% off your first order. You'll be helping to support 70 decibels and Squarespace will know that you've come straight from us.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Today I thought we'd just talk about kind of a hodgepodge of stuff that that I'm really liking and have found interesting, and I think it might be topical for our regular listenership here on the Enough Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any to add, chime in. We haven't discussed this beforehand, so Mike has no idea what I'm going to talk about or mention, but that's okay. He usually doesn't, and that's why I do most of the talking.
It's how I like it. I like to be surprised.
So, I'm going to put down these Mardi Gras beads I picked up and started playing with because it drives the audio editor crazy.
Yep.
and talk about a few things. Okay, first off, so lately I've been forcing myself on my 11-inch MacBook Air to really embrace and love full screen mode in those applications that handle it well. As you know, macOS 10 Lion has this new nifty full-screen mode that it allows third-party apps to tap into. And some of those apps use it better than others. But it is some of those apps I really actually have come to enjoy the full-screen experience more than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
Safari.
Yep, I was just about to say that. Safari is kind of made for it.
Yeah. And I really, like, I tried it, like, when the first full screen mode came out, I was just like, I tried it for a second, I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting, and just ignored it.
I think it's worth a mention that this, well, for me especially, full screen mode only works on the 11-inch MacBook Air. I mean, to an extent, the 13 as well, but it works on small-screen devices. Like, I had a 24-inch iMac, and I have a Mac Mini plugged into a 23-inch screen, and it's not so good on that.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
It's,
I mean,
too
is
much
it,
space.
It's just too much and too big and too... Yeah, I can imagine that.
Lion is kind of made for that small screen, like the 11-inch MacBook Air, which is, I think, you know, many people say this, it is sort of the jewel in Apple's crown.
It's lovely.
If you've got, like, Launchpad, I don't use that, you know, personally, but again, on a larger monitor, it kind of just feels a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. But on 11-inch Air, it seems like it almost fits right in, you know, because that screen size is kind of not that much more than an iPad, for instance.
See, I remember when Lion was coming out, I wanted to talk a bit about about full screen mode of you, actually.
Yeah.
In regards to now you're using it, so it's probably the right time. I thought that you might like it because it enforces more focus on the application you're using, in a way. True, you know, like, true. If you... I mean, I know when I've had a larger monitor, I have I have an app, say a web browser, or even a text editing application.
Yeah.
You know, I will have that open in like Twitter and IM to the side of it.
Yeah.
But on my Air, I tend to run a lot more of those sort of apps full screen, so the other ones are kind of away somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and let me back up a bit and say one of the reasons why I think I didn't really see what the big deal was, and I've mentioned this before, is because I have for a very long time, and by very long I mean since Mac OS 9, used every single machine I've owned with hide-on switch enabled. So I only ever see one application at a time. So full screen mode or not, it really didn't matter. I still had that kind of quote-unquote focus.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Really? I've mentioned this before.
I don't... you may have done it. It doesn't jog my memory. But.
Yeah, I use a application that is now defunct but hasn't really broken yet called Light Switch X to achieve this. And basically what it does is it replaces the... default command tab switcher with a better one. Namely, it can be resized. It can also do things like single application mode or hide on switch, so that you're only seeing one application at a time.
There's an app called Spirited Away that I'm vaguely familiar with.
Yes.
Does that do that? Or does it just clear things away?
I don't know how Spirited Away actually handles it. I've never bothered to try it because I've been using Light Switch X since Mac OS 9.
Right.
I mean, I've been using it. There was a version for Mac OS 9. Actually, I think there was a version for Mac OS 8 even. But I think I discovered it with Mac OS 9.
Right.
And started using it then, although it could have been 8.6 for what I remember, in case I digress. And I promise you we would have no digressions today. So, basically, full screen mode really didn't matter necessarily because I was only seeing one application at a time. But being able to fill up my whole screen does provide a more immersive experience, I am finding. I also am enjoying the ability on the trackpad to three-finger swipe swipe between full screen applications. And that has proved really quick and really nice. Other apps I'm really enjoying it in, OmniFocus. It's great in OmniFocus, especially.
Did you have OmniFocus for OmniFocus?
Yes, I have OmniFocus for OmniFocus, and I find it's especially good for one of the perspectives I have is in OmniFocus is a today perspective that just shows me things that are due today, or things I've flagged.
Mm-hmm.
And in that perspective, I've hidden away the menu bar. I've hidden away the left hand column that shows you context and projects and things like that. And I have just this really nice big screen of just my tasks, which is fantastic. Mail.
There's some apps that don't work, like iChat on Messages doesn't really
work. Yeah. Like, what is that gray fabric flannel crosshatch linen, whatever it is, background
seems a bit weird.
It's weird, it's strange, and it's like, okay, well then why bother? Right?
Yeah. stretch the whole thing out, but then it's ugly.
Yeah.
So then you put the linen in, and it's just, what's the point in having it full screen if it's not full screen?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, and so absent that do it like that, I just don't even bother with.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is Busy Cal, which is, great full screen. Reader, which is great full screen.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I agree with that totally.
And Mail, which I'm loving full screen. Now, that said, here's the other kind of side advantage I like about full screen mode. It almost forces you to get comfortable with the keyboard shortcuts, right? Because things like the menus are gone, and in a lot
they're
of apps.
They're a millisecond away, aren't they? Like, you have to sort of hover. And some apps don't really work, like editing apps like GarageBand, for example, which I do spend quite a bit of time in. Going to be moving up to Logic quite soon, but like, for example, if you want, the way that I get the recordings into GarageBand, I nearly said GarageBand, and then sort of half corrected myself, is like I will drag them from the Finder into the window. Well, you can't do that in full screen mode.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so there are little things that don't really suit. Probably.
Yeah, it's true. But in the places where it makes sense, it makes sense. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. And what I coupled with that, I am a big user of desktops. Desktops like Spaces.
Oh okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Multiple desktops.
Yeah, so like for example, I have my main desktop where like Sparrow and Messages will be, and Envy Alt will be, and then when I'm recording, I have Desktop 2 where like Skype will be and QuickTime and all that sort of stuff. You know, so I like to have it set out like that, and those two desktops have different desktop backgrounds.
Gotcha.
Because you can set that. Yeah, and you can set that. I like that. You know, I like that order, and then I can continue to use the. Is it three fingers or four fingers? The four finger swipe motion.
Left and right. To go between desktops?
Yeah.
Okay.
And desktops and apps. And then you can do the swipe up for Mission Control, which I think was such a great addition, like such a lovely step forward from Expose. I'm a big fan of Mission Control.
Yeah. Okay. Huh. Interesting.
I really Lion in general. Actually.
So, question, Spaces. Because I don't really use them. I thought they kind of went away in Lion. Is that not the case?
Yeah, but they were replaced with just desktops. It's part of Mission Control. So when you go into Mission Control...
Oh, I gotcha. Okay,
you go up the top, and then a new sort of desktop creeps in, and you just press the plus button, and it gives a new desktop. So and they're just called Desktop 1, Desktop 2, and so on. And they're like how Spaces used to be. Oh,
yes. Okay, I see it.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Michael just taught me something I didn't know about. Have you ever thought of being a Mac consultant? I'm just curious because you kind of know a lot about this stuff. Maybe you can help others like you've just helped me.
I wished.
No, you don't. Trust me, you don't. Stick to the day job and the night one too.
Yeah. See, I love it. I love Mission Control and the things that brings in. Very cool.
Very neat. Wow, I never noticed that. Okay, other thing I wanted to mention them that I'm just liking and just in general astounded by. Have you seen David Sparks, Max Sparky's paperless book?
Humana.
Holy cow.
Humana. See, I told everyone that iBooks Author would be amazing, but everyone's like, no, Michael, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, David Sparks has proved it.
I think that David Sparks has found an extremely good use for the platform and exactly for the sort of thing that the platform is built for. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is the platform just isn't built for me.
It's not built for just text. You do need more.
No, you need more. And Max Sparky, otherwise known as David Sparks, Esquire, because he's an attorney, a barrister, he knocked it out of the park with this. First of all, it really is a what we believe in hear it enough sort of topic. It is, it's about going paperless. And basically, it is a field guide for that, for everything that you could possibly ever want to know, from reasons to methodology to strategies to tools to tips about going paperless, and taking all of that paper in your life and turning it digital and making sense out of it and filing it in ways that make sense and retaining it for times that make sense and getting tools and analog and digital that will help you along the way. So really, really, really fantastic. But second of all, he exploits everything you possibly could about iBooks Author, from like an hour and a half of video in this thing. Mm-hmm. And tons of pictures and examples, and slideshows, and you know, all of it kind of interactively linked together. So if you get to a section that needs a, you know, that needs further explanation, he's like, yeah, I go into this deeper in this chapter, and when you tap on this chapter, it takes you to that. And it's just, I mean, it's mind blowing how much work went into this thing.
There's over an hour and a half's worth of video.
Yeah. Yeah.
In it, like screencasts and stuff.
Yeah.
I recommend as well a recent episode of the Mac Power Users podcast, which he is a host of, with Katie Floyd. He goes into sort of depth about a bit more about paperless, really. Like it's
Sort of
companion to the book.
Oh, cool. I was not aware.
Did you notice
of this
as well that it's called a Mac Sparky Field Guide?
Yes.
Therefore suggesting there will
more.
Be more of them.
Yeah. Oh, if he did one for OmniFocus. Oh.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, because he already has a lot of the video content and stuff like that already in place. For anyone who wants to dive a bit deeper into OmniFocus, or even just get the basics of how to make it useful, his OmniFocus Ninja Tricks video series on, I believe it's called, really, really, really helpful. Most of what I do with OmniFocus and how I have it set up and how I interact with it is based upon those videos.
So we're hoping to have him on the Bro Show in a couple of weeks' time. As soon as he released the book, I sent him an email and said, we need to get you back on in June.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously he would be removed from the launch of the book. So I actually want to talk to him about the process and stuff and what the future holds. Because I'm sure it looks like it's been quite successful.
Yeah.
Looking at the charts and stuff.
Deserves to be. It's only $5.
Yeah, Apple must love this. To see someone come along and make something like this on their own.
On their own for $5. And incredible. It's brilliant. It's unbelievably professionally done. I mean, it's extremely well done.
Like even down to the typography is it just looks great. The whole package is fantastic. He's done an incredible job, like on his own. I don't know if he had any help, but you know, with the design and layout and stuff, I'll ask him that. But you know, he's published it himself. We know that much. So he didn't have like a full team behind him.
Yeah.
How does he find the time?
He's an attorney, for God's sakes.
How did he manage it?
The only thing I can figure is that he has no clients. Right? He must not have any clients at all. Like, you know, he must have gotten his law degree and then really hit it big with this internet thing and just said, okay, well, I'll be a lawyer in name only and, pay my bar membership and, you know, sit around producing iBooks Author books all day.
I'll keep the cloak.
Yeah.
He's a superhero, right?
That guy is a total superhero. Mm-hmm. I'm so both impressed and absolutely jealous. Look, folks, just don't even if you have an iPad, if you have iBooks, this belongs there. Mm-hmm. $5, it'll be the best $5 you've spent in a very long time. Trust us on this. All right? I mentioned a couple of things that have been kind of rocking my world lately. What's anything been rocking yours that you can talk about?
Pens, man.
Oh, dude, you've gone down that rabbit hole.
And I'm never coming back. I'm dropping change now on these things.
Oh, man.
Starting that show with Brad, the pen addict, was both a great and horrible idea. Yeah, I'm getting into pens in a really big way now.
It's bad. It's really bad. I told you. Did I not warn you, Michael?
Yes, you did. You really did. I mean, and there's this one pen, like, that I love dearly. It's called the Retro 51 Tornado.
Mm-hmm.
I have received a pen that's been on my list for a while called the Pilot Vanishing Point. Oh. I would suggest... So as of this current recording, I have not. It is sitting downstairs unopened, and it's driving me mad.
Uh-huh.
Basically, if you listen to a couple of episodes of The Pen Addict, like there'll be, we'll make sure they're in the show notes. But it was basically a 2.5 week saga of this thing getting through customs. So I'm sure I'll be very impressed with that. But the Tornado is like $20. And it's a ballpoint, and it's both beautiful and one of the most comfortable writing experiences I've ever had. And it comes down from the build quality of the thing, which is incredible. And it looks, they're knockout. They really look fantastic. But the refill that the company makes,
yeah,
and the company's called Retro 1951,
yeah,
is fantastic. They are. Do you own one?
No, not a Retro 51.
We need to get you one because they. I mean, I am a fountain pen man like you.
Yeah,
I know that you are a fountain pen man, but
yep.
This thing it's okay. This thing rocks my world. I love it so much. I bought another one. Like, wow. There's no difference in it except the design, and I feel that I will be buying many more of these.
Sorry.
Sounds like you're achieving something for us.
I'm.
What are you looking for?
Oh, there it is. There it is. So tell me about this Namiki Vanishing Point of yours.
So I have
that you haven't opened yet.
So the pilot, yeah, there it is. You mm-hmm. have now. Do you have the pilot one or the Namiki one?
There really is only the Namiki is pilot.
Namiki is it's the Japanese name, but their brand is slightly differently when they're called Pilot Vanishing Point, they're branded slightly differently, right?
Yeah, just slightly. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But they are essentially the same.
Essentially, yes, they're the same thing. Just Pilot is their English brand name, from what I understand. And
yeah,
but the company is actually Namiki.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Pilot Japan. So, like, you know, everyone's heard of Pilot, but this is their Japan arm.
Yeah,
they sell them outside of Japan under the Pilot name.
Yeah. So do tell. Did you get one of those lovely stealth ones like Mr. Dowdy did?
Yeah, I got the one that Brad did, the matte mm-hmm. black, and I mm-hmm. have the broad nib mm-hmm. because I like a medium European nib. Mm-hmm. But in mm-hmm. Japan they run their nibs a size lower, so I'm mm-hmm. hoping that the broad will substitute for medium because yep. Into an extreme rat hole here that mm-hmm. if you enjoy and don't listen to the Pen Addict, you need to go and sort yourself
yeah,
out with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
but there's a pen by Pilot Japan called the Pilot Prera, which I know
yep.
I believe you own and are a fan of.
I have two sitting right in front of me, yep. right here. Here
gorgeous,
they are.
Gorgeous.
One gray,
thing.
One blue. They're highly affordable. They're well made cheap fountain pens. Extremely well made cheap fountain pens.
Yep. And I have the medium nib, and it's slightly too fine for me.
Ooh, so
I find it a little scratchy.
Yeah.
So I've gone for the broad, and I'm
you would
hoping,
hate mine because they're extra fines.
Yeah, that's what Brad uses too, and it's effectively to me, it's just like writing with a razor blade.
Yeah.
I don't know why someone would want to do it. I can only imagine I would cut all my notebooks in half.
Yeah.
But somehow you two manage it. You must be more nimble than me.
No, we just have very, very small handwriting.
Which I do.
Mine is actually smaller than his. Looking at pictures of his on the mm-hmm. internet, says he regularly posts, you know, when he tests out pens and whatnot. Mine.
I feel
is
like you need
smaller.
To write a letter to Brad, so
Ooh.
Then we can test this.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll use a very nice pen and some lovely stationery. As a matter of fact, I might just use my Namiki Vanishing Point, which is extra special because it's got a custom nib.
And then you can both send your letters to me.
Yeah.
And then I will write one.
So my Namiki vanishing point, and this is a real rat hole, and when you really get serious about your fountain pens, my friend, you're going to start to get really serious about your nibs.
Yeah.
And amongst the various, custom fountain pens I own, this one is in a tie for my favorite. But this pen nib was customized by a very well-known in fountain pen circles nib customizer by the name of Richard Binder. And so this is one of Richard Binder's extra, extra fine nibs. So he basically took a standard Namiki nib, vanishing point nib, and then ground it down under a microscope to an extra, extra fine, a Japanese extra, extra fine.
No idea how you can deal with something like that.
This thing lays down the tiniest, most beautiful little line full of character that you've ever seen. It is unbelievable. It also costs way too much money, but it is really great. And then when you really start to get nerdy about it, I'll discuss just briefly my other favorite nib, which is actually on a Levenger True Writer. The Levenger True Writer series of fountain pens made by Levenger. And those who listen regularly and follow me on Twitter or whatever know that, I'm basically Levenger's bitch. I'm a big fan. Big, big, big fan. And I'm a big fan of their True Writer pens. They're a very decent, affordable fountain pen. The nib on this one is a stub nib. As a stub nib, it basically is more of a calligraphic nib, calligraphy. It's kind of got a flat tip to it. So, you get wide on the, wide on the downstrokes and thin on the forward strokes, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. It adds a lot of character to, to a signature or to what you're writing. And there I'm writing with it. Oh, wow, look at that. Beautiful. What's interesting about this is that I had this a full year and a half before they even started offering stub nibs for sale. This stub is a prototype that they had custom ground and that a friend of mine acquired and then gave to me because it wasn't his thing. Mm-hmm. And so this particular Levenger stub nib is different than even the ones that they sell. It's better in many respects. It's got the perfect amount of flex to it. And you really get an expressive line. As a matter of fact, I would love to write a letter. And I will. I'm going to write a thank you note or, just a greeting note to you using this pen so you can see how beautiful it is. So fountain pens, eh?
Mm-hmm. Love them.
I think you're going to be keeping that banking job for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to. Don't worry, it'll wear off eventually. At some point, you're just going to have to walk away. You're just going to have to say, "I've got enough."
I have a very addictive personality.
I know. So do I. So do I. I'm here to tell you that 50 or 60 pens later, I can now say, you know what? Very few things would get me to pull my money out of my pocket in the fountain pen world these days because I have almost everything I could ever ask for. I've got some beautiful vintage pens. I've got some beautiful modern pens. I've got the great big, bold, CEO signing corporate document sort of, with a pen that is more expensive than some people's cars, sort of pen. I've got the custom pens and I've got the cheap pens. But I'll tell you the one, the pen that has ruined me lately.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even have to get into this because we really should go. The Pilot 5-Tech C.
Oh, right, yeah.
The high-tech C.
Yeah, I was about to. I would suggest pick up a high-tech C Colito, which is a multi-pen.
Uh-huh.
So you can have high-tech C refills in a multi-pen. And I have 4 different color high-tech C refills at my disposal anytime.
Damn, I gotta get one of those.
And you don't have to deal with what I consider to be a horrendously uncomfortable barrel in the regular high-tech C.
So you got that at the Jet Pens?
Mm-hmm. The Colito, Coleto.
Okay, all right.
Check that out, and you can get basically you get the empty barrel and buy like a pack of the refills, and you get like 12 colors or something for relatively cheap. It's good stuff.
Nice. All right.
Okay, well, let's wrap this one up.
We're gonna go.
We've all right. devolved into the pen addict.
Yes, we have devolved into the pen addict, but that's okay. So, full screen mode, good. Paperless, buy it. Pens, avoid them if you value your income. All right.
Sounds great.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.